Hey everyone, welcome to the Mass Construction Show. I'm your host, Joe Kelly, and this is a podcast about all things construction in Massachusetts and beyond. Today's show is brought to you by Central Commercial Carpenters in support of our conversations. Enjoy the show. Let's be honest, the modular revolution has not come to fruition. Progress has certainly been made, but no revolution is in sight. In a recent article in the Harvard Business Review, a name familiar to a lot of local Boston builders, Mark Ehrlich, former head of the New England Regional Council of Carpenters, Boston Appeals Board member, and now Wertheim Fellow at Harvard Law School's Center for Labor and Just Economy. Mouthful. All that to say, in his article, Mark outlined all the attempts over the years to bring modular construction to reality. He does a nice job of laying out the various attempts, starting back as early as 1895 with the Sears catalog Home Kits, to a 1969 federal program that I was not aware of called Operation Breakthrough, a partnership of labor, consumers, private enterprise, local, state, and federal government. Operation Breakthrough was intended to standardize and industrialize housing parts and modules and lead to an era in which factory-built housing was poised to leapfrog over the on-site stick building techniques as the principal method of home construction. But like previous large-scale forays into industrialized buildings, Breakthrough failed. Operation Breakthrough failed. The new systems did not realize projected savings, and transportation costs were only viable if the factory was near the ultimate site. A 1976 General Accounting Office look-back report determined that conventional building was cheaper. Those last two paragraphs were quotes, so I want to make sure I'm attributing that to Mark's work. Now, there were more current rays of hope, such as the promise of BIM, which has become a net positive, and companies such as Skender Manufacturing, no longer in business, and the spectacular collapse we're all familiar with of Katerra. On the bright side, this factory OS, which Mark points out as a success, co-founders Larry Pace and Rick Holiday partnered with the Northern California Regional Council of Carpenters to start the new venture as a unionized plant. Mark also points out what J.C. Canestraro has done, setting up a panelization shop in the Seaport District of Boston. With all of this said, this article paints a picture of some success, but no major breakthroughs. Here's the closing paragraph. Quote, prefabrication components will only increase in scale and scope for the most part. Construction workers will continue to put on their boots and hard hats, stuff tape measures, hammers, pliers, utility knives, and other tried and true hand tools in their tool belts, and carry out their daily responsibilities in much the same way their predecessors did. Rises Grossman, who prides himself on thinking about the industry's future, told me, I cannot come across a scenario where we really pull the workforce out of what's happening in the field. Within the article, the author briefly gets into the effect on the end-of-the-line worker. Quote, it is part of a gradual long-term de-skilling trend of specialization and the shift from fabricator to installer. Trade workers have seen their assignments become more narrowly defined as the era of the generalists has been replaced by a demand for specialty skills, and more pre-assembled materials arrive at site to be simply put in place. Semi-skilled jobs in a factory offer even less opportunity for autonomy and creativity and provide lower compensation. Okay, I'm sure you're taking issue with maybe some part of this article. I'm not really here to land on one side or the other of the prefabrication modular debate, but I am very interested in the effect it has on the worker. The pros of prefabrication is speed, safety, consistency, less waste, and a better product. However, on the flip side, I believe there is big risk with employee satisfaction. I recently ran a poll on LinkedIn and Instagram that asked, is prefabrication and modular making work less or more satisfying for the tradespeople? Now, I suspected that the results would have skewed heavily towards more, seeing that the Mass Construction's audience is more managerial than trade worker. But surprisingly, it was 52-48 in favor of more satisfying. So basically a coin toss, 50-50, which to me means there's something there with worker satisfaction and that it is an issue. Now, why did I think the managerial side of things would predict more? Well, because they like it themselves. I would like it if I was a super. How much easier is your job when everything is done off-site and brought on-site in modules or pieces that are assembled in place? You've gone from coordinating potentially hundreds of people on-site to a much smaller crew with less or no measuring, cutting, hot work, or many of the things that inject risk and require diligent management. So will this lead to lower worker satisfaction? I think it depends on your personality. If it's me and my job is to assemble parts and pieces in a predictable manner all day, every day, not for me. Nope, never. But if you're someone who likes things organized, predictable, and with no bumps in the road, then it might improve your satisfaction. But why does this even matter? Well, most importantly, we want people to be happy, and we want to work with people who are happy and are happy with themselves. True statement, but somewhat Pollyanna. More realistically, we need to recruit people into our industry, and we want them to stay. Being a craftsperson that makes things with your hands is appealing to many. Assembling IKEA furniture? Not so much. A lot more to come on this topic, but please send me your opinion. I would love to hear what you have to say. Now for audio from the Essential Craftsman episode discussing the art and nature of workmanship, contrasting workmanship of risk versus workmanship of certainty. I think you will find this relevant to the discussion on worker satisfaction, and I would love to hear your thoughts. Take care.
So there was a guy, I think, in the 60s in Great Britain, David Pye, and he wrote this beautiful little book. It's I think, his only paperback, but it is The Art and Nature of Workmanship, I think. And he invented this thought or this term, and he would compare and contrast workmanship of risk with workmanship of certainty. And he spoke, and so think of workmanship of certainty as a table saw or a shaper that's jigged up, and every time you introduce a board, you're going to get exactly the same profile. Or you can expand that to modern, you know, the Industrial Revolution was all about making everything into workmanship of certainty. You have a machine, you input the commodity, the finished material comes out the other end with no more human interaction than that. But workmanship of risk is, think of an elaborate wood carving, or you're blacksmithing a project, or you're framing a house. Everything you do has the risk of catastrophic failure based on your workmanship. And the more work you input, like think of a really nice carving or a carved piece of art, or Michelangelo's David. Okay. He's chiseling away at that block. And the more labor he invests, the more the likelihood of a sudden catastrophic slip increases, until for the final 10% of the work, it's all on the line with every blow. That's workmanship of risk. And so the whole idea, so this David Pye talked about people that set up manufacturing facilities, and he would have and probably should have included construction carpenters as the last refuge of workmanship of risk. Everything's a prototype. You don't know if it's going to work. You don't know if this is going to be right until you're done. And then once you're done, the certainty enters, and everybody that comes after benefits from your risk-taking. And so anyhow, I've loved and continue to love that idea, and I tell myself as I go, okay, this is workmanship of risk. Pay attention. And then you try to systemize it, become systematic, and reduce it to workmanship of certainty. So the guy coming behind you can read your layout and stage the material appropriately, and the scaffolding is safe, and it's just an interesting way to think about a blue collar work effort.
Yeah, I mean, I like that concept, and I think the place you could go with it from a big picture would be, how could you take your construction project, which might be 30% risk, right? How do you move it into move more of it into the management of certainty?
Yes. Yep.
Right.
As you do that, profitability goes up.
Yes.
Okay? Yep. Mistakes go down. Productivity goes up. You anticipate quantities. Waste falls off. And so as you get into certainty, profit goes up. And work satisfaction goes down. At least it always did for me. You know, as a, in fact, my partner, Cy Swan, you'll see my black, he's more than a partner. He's my blacksmithing mentor and friend. That wonderful Renaissance man, old Renaissance man, will intentionally input risk into almost everything he does. And it makes me crazy because he will intentionally, and I think it's somewhat subliminal, but if there's not an element of risk, if there's not the possibility of getting hurt or hurting the work, he loses interest. And it's just an interesting sort of a personality aspect that he has. And I haven't met many people like him.